ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Chapter number 26 and text number 16. And the chapter is titled as King Krundana Goes to the Forest to Hunt. Text number 16. Kwa vartate salalana?
Kwa vartate salalana?
मज्जन्तं व्यासनार्णवे यामामुदारते प्रज्ञां दीपयन्ति पदे पदे वावर्तते सालना मज्जन्तं व्यासनार्णवे यामामुदारते प्रज्ञां दीपयन्ति पदे पदे वावर्तते सालना मज्जन्तं व्यासनार्णवे यामामुदारते प्रज्ञां दीपयन्ति पदे पदे। क्वा
क्वा
वेया
Where?
Vartate.
Vartate.
Is now staying.
Is now staying.
Sa.
Sa.
She.
She.
Lalana.
Lalana.
A woman.
Woman.
Majjantam.
Majjantam.
While drowning. Just remember this word here. Majjantam. Just keep that at the back of your mind. Majjantam means while drowning.
While drowning.
Drowning. Vyasanarnave.
Vyasanarnave.
In the ocean of danger.
In the ocean of danger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who? Mom? Me.
Udharate.
Delivers.
Delivers.
Pragnyam.
Pragnyam.
Good intelligence.
Good intelligence.
Another word to remember the back of your mind as we go through the class, yeah? Pragnyam means good intelligence. Vajanta means
while
drowning. And pragnyam means good intelligence.
Deepayanti.
Deepayanti.
Enlightening.
And this is probably the third word to remember because I'll be speaking about these three words. Yeah, Deepayanti means enlightening or lightening. Yeah, pade pade.
Pade pade.
In every step.
In every step.
Translation interpreted by Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada ki.
Yeah.
Kindly let me know the whereabouts of the beautiful woman who always saves me while I'm drowning in the ocean of danger by giving me good intelligence at every step. See, she always saves me. Purpose. There is no difference between a good wife and good intelligence. There is no difference between a good wife and good intelligence. All the Mother Teresa is mine. That is what they are saying. One who possesses good intelligence can deliberate properly and save himself from many dangerous conditions. Prabhupada writes that there is no difference between a good wife and good intelligence. Why is good intelligence required? Because he writes, one who possesses good intelligence can deliberate properly and save himself from many dangerous conditions. Why do we have to save ourselves from many dangerous conditions? Where are the dangerous conditions? Prabhupada writes, in material existence, there is danger at every step. In Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.58, it is said, Padam padam yad vipadam na desham. This material world is not actually a place for residence for an intelligent person or a devotee, because here there is danger at every stage, at every step. So intelligence is required to analyze ourselves out of the danger. Prabhupada writes, first point. Second point is, where is the danger? In the material world, Prabhupada writes that there is danger at every step. And then he writes that because there is the danger at every step, this material world is not a place for gentlemen. So then where is our place? Then he writes, Vaikuntha is the real home for the devotee, for there is no anxiety or no danger, which we already know. Good intelligence means becoming Krishna consciousness. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said, Krishna ya bhaje na bada, na bada chatura. Unless one is Krishna conscious, he cannot be called an intelligent person. So in the first paragraph of the Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada is talking about danger and how to save ourselves from the danger. So he's talking mainly from a principal's point of view. Yeah? In the next paragraph, which is the last paragraph as well, he talks more about the intelligence, you know, and how does this fit into the current episode of the Bhagavatam that we are reading. Yeah? So let's hear that. Here we see that King Puranjana was searching after his good wife, who always helped him out of dangerous situations that always occur in material existence. As already explained, a real wife is Dharma Patni. That is, a woman accepted in marriage by a ritualistic ceremony is called Dharma Patni, which signifies that she is accepted in terms of religious principles. Children born of Dharma Patni, or a woman married according to religious principles, inherit the property of the father. But children born of a woman who is not properly married do not inherit the father's property. The word Dharma Patni also refers to a chaste wife. A chaste wife is one who never had any connection with men before her marriage. Once a woman is given freedom to mingle with all kinds of men in her youth, it is very difficult for her to keep chaste. She generally cannot remain chaste. When butter is brought into the proximity of fire, it melts. The woman is like fire and man is like butter. But if one gets a chaste wife accepted through religious marriage ritual, she can be of a great help when one is threatened by the many dangerous situations of life. Actually, such a woman can become the source of all good intelligence. With such a good wife, the family's engagement in the devotional service to the Lord actually makes a home of Grihastha Ashram, or household dedicated to spiritual cultivation. Om Jnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Nimitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Ashyatya Desa Vatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Ganadhar Shri Vashadi Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So, today we will be looking at this from different angles. We will firstly look at the text of the day, go a little bit deeper into the text of the day, and then we will look how this text fits into the context of the current episode, and then we will also see how this episode fits into this canto 4 of Srimad Bhagavatam, and then we will talk about the allegory. Most of us are now becoming familiar with this allegory that's going on about King Puranjan, so I'll throw some light on that because most of us are probably familiar, but for the benefits of those who are not, you know, just a little light on the allegory. And then we will look at the learnings that can be drawn out of this particular episode of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, the title, the chapter is titled as King Puranjan Goes Back to the Forest to Hunt. And actually when you look at the Vedavice online, it adds something else towards the end. You know, it says that the King Puranjan goes to the forest to hunt and his wife becomes angry. And that's what Prabhupada is talking about, the wife in this context. Yeah? So the verse starts with Kwa Vartate Sa Lalana. Kwa means where. Vartate means where is she situated. And Sa Lalana. And Lalana means, you know, the beautiful woman. In this context again, the beautiful woman means Puranjan's wife. Who was the Puranjani. So when he comes back from the forest, he is looking for his dear wife. So he says Kwa Vartate Sa Lalana. sounds quite intimate, you know, the way he's addressing his wife, you know, Lalana. Most of us probably don't, you know, not familiar with these words anymore. In the modern times, it becomes more romantic. Generally, you know, when my poor is wife or girlfriend, you know, sweetheart or something like that. You know. But here, Paranjan shows the same affection, you know, of Pavartate Salana, Lalana. Majantam Vyasa Narmane. Majantam, you know, I had asked you to remember this word Majantam. This word Majantam we also find in our Damodar Lila. When Satyavrata Muni is offering his heartfelt prayers to Lord Damodar, then there, and I was explaining this last time as well, there he says that, Iti Drikshva Lilavi Ananda Kunde, Swaghosha Nimajantam, Majantam, Majantam. That same word is here, Majantam. So there what is happening, Iti Drikshva Lilavi Ananda Kunde. When Satyavrata Muni is looking at the devotees of Raja who are drowning themselves in the pools of ecstasy, being associated with Krishna in his pastimes, he is drowning, he himself is drowning in misery, but looking at other, he is drowning himself in misery because of separation of Krishna, not because of any material pain. And he is looking at the residents of Vrindavan and they are enjoying in pools of ecstasy with Krishna. So when he is going through his Nimajjantam, when he is drowning, he is praying to Krishna to save him. And this is the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee. Now, Prabhupada explains in other purports that when a devotee is suffering and drowning Nimajjantam, he is begging to Krishna. But when a non-devotee is drowning, then he prays to his wife or to his families to save him. So a big difference between devotees and non-devotees. Our source of rescue is always the lotus feet of Krishna. Where for the non-devotees is always something else. So Nimajjantam Vyasa Narmane. Now I'm drowning in misery. Where is that beautiful wife who used to save me every time? That's how he's praying. That's how he's saying. Then Namam Udharate Prajna. So how she used to save me? This is Puranjan saying. How was Puranjani saving Puranjan at every step through Namam? Yamam Udharate Prajna. So Udhar means to deliver, or to save. So the wife was saved through Prajna. This word Prajna we also see in Bhagavad Gita in chapter 2. When Krishna is explaining to Arjuna about, you know, how he should give away his material greed and rise and fight, then at that time, at the initial stages, Krishna shows Arjuna the glimpse of what pure devotion means. He doesn't talk about prema at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, but he starts climbing the ladder of yoga. So he talks about Stitha Prajna. So at that point in time, Arjuna asked Krishna, Prajnyam ka bhasa? How does, and many questions he asked actually about this Stitha Prajna. How does he walk, how does he talk, how does he behave, how does he act? And then Krishna says that Prajna in there, Prabhupada explains as intelligence or mind, purified mind. There's a technical difference between mind and intelligence. But for today's discussion, we will probably stay away from the technical bit. So we'll take mind and intelligence as a composite. Because I'll be talking about mind and intelligence a lot. So for today, just bear with me. Take it as a composite, as one unit. Yeah, mind and intelligence. So there Krishna says to Arjuna that, you know, for Stitha Prajna, his mind is purified. And that's why his thinking, feeling and willing is in one with the way I think, feel and will. So it's in congruation with Krishna's desires. So, Stitha Prajna. So here the wife is to save Puranjan with her intelligence. And Prabhupada translates Puranjani's intelligence as material intelligence. So here we see Puranjan is looking for his wife. And the wife in this context is a symbolic wife. Why symbolic wife? Because, let me just take one step back maybe, you know. In Bhagavatam, you know, we find a lot of stories. When I say stories, I don't mean mythologies. I mean real events. From which we can draw symbolic lessons. We can learn real lessons and we can also learn symbolic lessons from the real pastimes. In Bhagavatam, there are also non-literal pastimes. Non-literal literally means those that didn't genuinely happen. And one of them is this pastime here, regarding King Puranjan. Because this is an imagination story that Narad Muni is telling Prachin Bhari. So it's a made-up of a story. Why? Because, and I'll talk about it a little bit later as well, why is he using a made-up of a story, you know, along with it? It's a non-literal pastime. So from these non-literal pastimes, we can also draw symbolic lessons. And what are those lessons? We'll speak about that as well. So, but if you go back to the Bhagavad Gita, you know, there, Krishna is talking to Arjuna about purifying his senses, purifying his mind and purifying his intelligence. Why do we need to purify our mind? Because the mind is very flickering, as we know. Our mind sometimes is in order, sometimes it is in disorder. And a lot of times it can be on the border. For a pure devotee, the mind is always in order. It is always under their control. For the non-devotees, the mind is always, you know, in disorder. And for sadhakas like us, it's generally on the border. Sometimes we are here, sometimes we are there. We are tathasta sakshyata. So we can be very, very fickle like that. So there, Krishna tells Arjuna that one has to purify his mind and intelligence. Rather than being a non-devotee type mentality, when, you know, one is looking for the family member to save, we should, you know, dovetail our prayers to the Lord for begging him to save us. So we have to purify our intelligence. How do we purify our intelligence then? That's the next question. And again, Krishna tells us in Bhagavad Gita chapter 10 that Tesham satata yukta nam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayantite. So there is a difference between material intelligence and real intelligence. There is a difference between material intelligence and real intelligence. Material intelligence means what? Material intelligence means material intelligence Krishna has given to everybody. Intelligence in Sanskrit, you know, is 10-based buddhi. Krishna has given buddhi to everybody, including the animals. And human beings, of course. The intelligence has been endowed on all living entities so that they can at least function on the platform of their body, doing the activities into ahar, nidra, bhaya, vidyamcha, eating, sleeping, waking, and dependent. So they can do these four activities through intelligence. They can collect food, they can eat, and they can procreate, they can defend. But there is material intelligence. And if you look at our modern science at the moment, you know, their whole focus is on material intelligence, which is already there in the animals, but the human beings are trying to advance in material intelligence. And that is why if you think of it, you know, the biggest industries at the moment are what? Defense and consumer. Defense industry and the consumer industry are the biggest areas where the money is being spent, billions of dollars. And what is consumer industry and defense industry? Consumer industry is made up of ahar, nidra, maithuna. And defense industry is made up of bhai. So whole focus of this. Science does not have the ability at the moment to go beyond matter into metaphysical, you know, substance. Talk something that is called consciousness. You know, recently, the science magazine which gets published now, on the 125th anniversary, there was an article about many things that science does not know solutions to. 125 things that science does not know solution to. And the top one of it, the most important one, you know, on the top of the list was, what is the source of consciousness? Science does not know. What is the source of consciousness? Because this is not a material, the source of consciousness or the genesis of consciousness is nothing to do with ahar, nidra, bhaya, maitrayamcha. Now the four substances that science is at the moment focused on. So, there's a difference between buddhi and buddhi yoga. That's the point I was drawing. Buddhi means just, buddhi on its own means just material intelligence. Buddhi yoga means spiritual intelligence. So then how do we move from just mere buddhi to buddhi yoga? Krishna tells us this. Satatam atesham satata yuktana. So tesham satata yuktana. Now tesham satata yuktana means satatam. Tesham satata yuktana. So every day, satatam, eternal. Bhajatam priti purvakam, you know, those who worship me with priti, with love, with feelings. For one who worships me every day with feeling, with love, what do I do to him? Dadami buddhi yogam tam. I move him from just a mere buddhi to sthita pragya. moved him or her from this medium material intelligence to spiritual state intelligence, buddhi yoga. So there's a difference between buddhi and buddhi yoga. Buddhi means, again, operating, functioning on the platform of eating, sleeping, making and defending. Buddhi yoga means, you know, that intelligence through which we can connect to Krishna. Buddhi yoga. So Krishna saves us. You know, if we worship him nicely and lovingly, then he saves us at every step. You know, there's danger at every step. So in this particular context again, so how was Puranjani saving Puranjan? When Puranjan is looking for his dear wife, then what he's saying in the last line, Deepyanti Pade Pade. So my wife was saving me through Deepyanti, through enlightenment. So some spiritual enlightenment was also there in the wife, you know, who was saving Puranjan at every step. So if we summarize all that, you know, Puranjan comes back from forest after hunting, which was the usual activity for kings. And upon coming back, he's not able to find his wife. The wife seems to be upset. And this is probably not the first time that the wife is upset and the husband comes home. Generally happens in married life. Just another lila. So when he comes back, he's looking for his wife. Then he's saying, where is that wife who used to save me at every step? How did she save me? Through Deepyanti. Through Pragyan and through Deepyanti. Through intelligence and through enlightenment. Through intelligence and through enlightenment, she used to save me. So that's the text. So how does this text fit into this particular episode? Canto 4 is a discussion, dialogue between Maitreya Muni and Vidura. And there are many different pastimes within this Canto 4, very rich in terms of learnings that we can learn. It starts with Manu and Satrupa at the beginning. Then we generally talk about the lineage. Human beings started with Manu and Satrupa in one sense. You know. So generally the whole lineage is described by Maitreya Muni to Vidura. Daksha in Rochiva pastime we saw. Then we fast forward to Dhruva pastime, you know, beautiful pastime about Dhruva and glorious lady, his mother, Suniti, right? Suniti going back to Gore. Then Maitreya Muni then goes further into other lineage of Dhruva. He talks about King Anga, Krutu Maharaj. And at this point in time, he's talking about Prachinabhari. Prachinabhari was a very powerful king as well. And so the last 8 chapters of Canto 4 of Srimad Bhagavatam is about Prachinabhari and his 10 sons, the Prachetas. So the Prachetas were of course devotees of the Lord, so they were advancing in Krishna consciousness, and Lord Shiva being pleased with them, which we will see very soon in the last 3 chapters or 4 chapters. Lord Shiva being very pleased with them, gave them, you know, the Rudra Gita, which we have already seen. So this story is kind of intertwined. The Prachetas and the Prachinabhari pastimes in the 8 chapters are intertwined. It's not that one happens and then the other. It happens as a flashback. So the Prachetas of course become devotees of the Lord. But this is not one takeaway for us, probably the first takeaway. Narad Muni makes an effort to go and preach to Prachinabhari. Why? Only for one reason. Narad Muni was the spiritual master for Dhruva, remember? And he liberated Dhruva. He gave them Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudeva and liberated him, made him a pure devotee. Then as the lineage continues, right at the end of chapter 4 are the Prachetas, the 10 sons of Prachinabhari. The Prachetas are showing signs of Krishna consciousness, and Lord Shiva being pleased with them, gives them the mantra and then, you know, advances their Krishna consciousness. But stuck in between is Prachinabhari. So Narad Muni, out of his mere compassion, because Prachinabhari is coming in the lineage of Dhruva Maharaj, makes a resolution to go and deliver, or at least enlighten Prachinabhari. Makes an effort to go and enlighten Prachinabhari. So just because Prachinabhari is coming in the lineage of Dhruva Maharaj, he is getting the mercy of Narad Muni. And we hear many times, you know, in our Krishna consciousness, if one person becomes a devotee in the family, many, many generations will benefit. No? And this is a classical example of how, just because Dhruva Maharaj was a devotee, Prachinabhari is getting the mercy of Narad Muni. So what does Narad Muni do? At this particular episode now, Narad Muni makes an effort to go, literally to go to Prachinabhari and enlighten him. Now there was a problem with Prachinabhari. And this is a problem with many new people who come to Krishna consciousness and many people who don't even come to Krishna consciousness. The problem with Prachinabhari was, although he was a very powerful king, he was very attached. He was very attached to his are Vedic ritualistic activities. So when somebody is so attached, you know, to their material ways of living, you know, an expert preacher tries to handle them differently, depending on time, place, and circumstance. You know, this is another lesson for us now. Whenever we are trying to preach, we have to preach according to time, place, and circumstance. So here, knowing that Pachinwari is very attached to materialistic way of living, and in here we can see he is, you know, calling out for his dear wife. Narad Muni tries to take a text of the preaching through the method of allegory. So what does allegory mean? You know, allegory means if you say something, but it has got another meaning to it. You know, it has got another symbolic meaning to it. So for example, you know, if I was to say that something to Kausalanand Prabhu, you know, that I would like, you know, that devotee. So I won't take his name. I would say another devotee's name, you know, or another person's name. You know, to say that, you know, that Rahul should come to Srimad Bhagavatam classes more often, like that. So, if we are close friends, you know, then he will hopefully get the message that actually I am talking to him, in one sense, you know. But I am talking, just not taking another name. So here, Prachin Bhai, and Kausalanand Prabhu comes to Bhagavatam almost every day. So that was not, you know, any direct coming to him. So, Prachin Bhai is replaced in this episode with Puranjan. It's the same personality, Prachin Bhai is replaced with Puranjan. So, Narad Muni is talking everything about Puranjan, but he is actually referring to Prachin Bhai. So in this pastime, it teaches us how to preach to somebody when somebody is too attached to somebody. And this is again very usual for those of us who go out preaching, you know, either in personal life, on the streets, in bhakti rickshaws. You know, when we meet new people, when we find them too attached to something, we don't dismantle them immediately. Because if we do, they will probably run away. You know, they will never come back. So we have to be very tactfully elevate them according to their level. It happens in bhakti riksha especially, because, you know, I've got some experience, a little experience of a bhakti riksha preaching. So it happens many times when new people come. You know, just after you have given, you know, a class on the science of self realization, and you're so engrossed about cooking Bhoshra Prabhupada, about, you know, about our deities, you know, everything is there, and then during prasadam time, now a new gentleman will walk up to you and then say, "Oh, my weekend was so beautiful, you know. I went to watch footy." So for devotees, you know, when our consciousness is little, you know, higher, you know, because of all the kirtan and all that, and somebody comes and talks about footy, it's like it's two different ball games. You are not in the mood. Now if you tell them, you know, you're asking, you're watching footy, it's a waste of human life, you should come to temple every day, you will never even come back to the bhakti riksha. So there, you know, you have to use the tact of getting to this level. You say, "Oh, you like footy? I also like footy." For personally, I've never watched footy. But the Prabhupada experiences in Bhagavatam in Canto 1, that is called transcendental fraud. It's kind of lying, it's cheating. But it is cheating not to impress somebody, but to inspire somebody. Transcendental fraud is not, no, we preach not to impress, we preach to inspire people. Yeah? So if we have to throw in one or two things that might not be necessarily true, but if it's with the mentality of inspiring him to advance in Krishna consciousness, then it is acceptable. But if it has got any other ulterior motive, then it has got no space in Krishna consciousness. Yeah. So yeah, I also like footy. Now we can say like that. But the reason being, when we connect to that person, yeah, then he might say, "Oh, you know, I like traveling." And you say, "I also like traveling." He might say, "Oh, you know, last year I went to Japan, you know, and I was in Tokyo, and it was the best sushi ever." You know, go, "Oh my God." You just wait for some opportunity to connect to him. You know? And then you say, "I also like traveling. You know? Last year I was in London for 6 months, you know, and I was working there, and oh my God, London is one of the biggest cities in the world, you know, etc., etc., etc. But you know what? After traveling so much, sometimes I find that, you know, I just need some place where there is no hustle and bustle of this city life, you know, there are no trams, there is no music, you know, there is no running around. I want to travel to such a place." And interestingly, last year, you know, I was in a place which is called Mayapur, you know, and it's just another world altogether, you know, it's very peaceful. So what is happening, you know, again, you are connecting to him at this level, you are leveraging from the point that person likes traveling. So you connect with him at a traveling level and then express your own realizations. But somehow or the other you are indirectly teaching it. So this is teaching to the according to time, place and circumstances. So people, for preachers, it is very important for us to connect to people at a human platform. As preachers, it is very important for us to connect to people at a human level before we can connect to them at a spiritual level. If we can connect to them at a human level, then it makes it easier for us to connect to them at a spiritual level. Because people want to be understood before they are ready to understand. If we can understand them, they will try to understand us as well. Yeah? So our behavior becomes very important when we are preaching. So in this particular allegory, Narad Muni is talking about King Puranjan. Puranjan means Pur means city, Jaipur, the cities of Jaipur, like that. Pur means city, and Ranjan means to enjoy or to give enjoyment, either way it's okay. Puranjan, so Puranjan is that person, you know, that tries to enjoy in this particular context, he's trying to enjoy. This word Ranjan also comes in our daily prayer, you know, Jai Radha Madhava. Jai Radha Madhava, what does that mean? Jai Radha Madhava. Madhava means sweet. So I'm praying to Radha, Sri Srimati Radharani, and to his sweet, which is Krishna. So Jai Radha Madhava, Kunja Vihari. Vihar means recreation. So they are doing recreation in the Vihar, in the groves of Vrindavan. Kunja Vihari. Gopi Jana Vallabha. Vallabha means lava. So that Krishna is the lover of the gopis. Gopi Jana Vallabha. Girvaradhari. Now in that Krishna lifts the Girvar. He lifts the Govardhan hill. Yashodhanandana. He is the son of Yashoda. Raja Jana Ranjana. So that Puranjan and that Ranjan is coming here as well. Raja Jana Ranjana. So Ranjana means, you know, Krishna is giving pleasure to the citizens of Raja, of Vrindavan. He's giving pleasure to the citizens of Vrindavan and he's also extending pleasure from those citizens. Yeah? So, Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamunati Ravanichari. So, he's Vanachari. Van means forest and Chari means wandering. No? He's wandering around in the forest. Where's the forest? Yamunati Tira means Van. Tira means the banks. So, this forest is along the banks of river Yamuna. So that prayer that we sing daily. So that Puranjan. So Puranjan means that person who is trying to enjoy. Now Krishna was enjoying in Raja. Raja Jana Ranjana. But this Puranjan is enjoying in Pura. That's the difference. Pura means city. So Krishna was enjoying in the village of Vrindavan. This Puranjan is enjoying in the city of his body. Because Narad Muni is using the Puranjan as an allegory to replace or symbolic. Symbolism to represent the body, the city of nine gates. That's our literally our material body. So Puranjan, so in this context, you know, the Puranjan refers to the soul, and the city refers to the body, the city of nine gates. You know? So the soul comes in contact, the soul comes inside the body to enjoy in the body. You understand? The soul comes in the body to enjoy the body. And that is the material disease that we have. Soul coming in contact with the material body to enjoy the material body. Now our problem is even twofold, literally. Because we are not only the souls who are in a material body of nine gates. We are not only in the soul that is in this pool, but this material body, which is a city in this context, is also literally in another city, which is Melbourne city. So there is double layers of ignorance, if you like. There is coverings with this body which we want to enjoy, and then in this body we want to enjoy the glamour of a modern city like Melbourne. So there is so much of heavy maya on top of us. Yeah. So, and then Narad Muni gives lot of different representations of each of the items. Now in this city there are walls which represent the skin, there are parks which represent the hair, then there are armies which represents our desires, then there are the five wooded serpents which represents the life force, etc., etc. Yeah? So he just tries to explain that to Prachinmani. And amongst all these, there is another personality, which is the Avigyat Sakha. So there is Puranjan, and then there is Avigyat Sakha. Now the Avigyat Sakha here is the super soul. So Narad Muni is explaining to Prasimha Hari that you know the soul is trying to enjoy in the material body, and he is oblivious to the existence of Agyatsaka, which is the super soul, and coming on and trying to enjoy in isolation. But when Puranjan leaves his body, then he dies and leaves his body, and in the next life, when he becomes Vaidarbhi, who is more devotionally inclined, the Abhigyat Sakha, who Puranjan was oblivious to, continues to accompany Puranjan, which becomes Vaidarbhi, in the next life. And the Abhigyat Sakha, which is the super soul, continues to play a neutral role, does not interfere with Vaidarbhi's desire until Vaidarbhi calls upon the super soul. So another lesson was learned here, that the super soul, which is the Abhigyat Sakha in this context, you know, O Krishna, his God is always determined to love us. As much as we are determined to go away from Krishna, Krishna is always determined to love us. But our problem is, you know, that, as I said, we are sometimes in order, sometimes out of order, and sometimes on the border. So the God is always in one point, continuously, determinedly waiting for us to love Him, or to love us. But we are just not able to reciprocate to Him at that extent. And how do we do that? How do we tend to Krishna? Again, Buddhi Veda. Buddhi Yoga, through Buddhi Yoga. So, we need to be preached to nicely, and we also need to preach nicely so that people can get attracted to it. Krishna warns us again in Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 3, you know, that those who are afflicted with material intelligence, just Puranjani, do not disturb them. Those who are inclined towards me, no, I will give them buddhi yoga, they will come to me. But those who are not so inclined, do not disturb them. How does the verse start? Na buddhi, vedam janya. So there Krishna uses buddhi, buddhi was the prajna. So buddhi is the intelligence. So na buddhi, vedam. Don't disturb them. Vedam means disturb them. Don't disturb their intelligence. So Krishna is warning us, don't disturb their intelligence. Beautiful poetic words there. Don't disturb their intelligence, Prabhupada translates it in the Bhagavad Gita. Don't disturb their whose intelligence? Janya. The non-devotee citizens. Don't disturb their buddhi. Now buddhi vedam janya. Why? Because agyanam karma sanginam. Because they are agyan, they are ignorant. And they are too attached. Sangina. Sangha means attachment. They are too attached to the karma. So don't disturb the intelligence of those people who are too attached to their normal ritualistic activities. But what we can do to them, at least at that level, is joshayat sarvat karmani. Joshayat. Daftail. Daftail, whatever they are doing, sarva, all karmani, all the activities, whatever they are doing, joshayat sarva karmani, into Krishna consciousness. And who is able to do this? Who is able to preach to this level there who are too attached to their materialistic ritualistic lifestyle is a person who is Vidyavan Yukta Samachara. No, that person is Vidyavan. That person is intelligent. Vidyavan means intelligent. So, to summarize that verse in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying that a person who is intelligent, person who is an intelligent preacher, will not disturb the material intelligence of those who are too ritualistic oriented. But he should be able to dovetail their activities into Krishna consciousness at their level. And then gradual development of Krishna consciousness can happen. So don't agitate it. And we learn the same values when Krishna talks about the austerities of speech. In the austerities of speech, Krishna is saying that even when we have to speak the truth, it should not agitate anyone. It should be palatable for people to hear. So speak in a way that is not agitating, but it should be more palatable. So, here, and also in terms of the preaching endeavors as well, when you are preaching to people who are too attached, in this context, Puranjan was too attached to his wife in a material way of life, not too attached. So then attachment causes his bondage. And we hear about this word attachment many times. You know, in our Krishna consciousness journey, we hear about we should not be attached to something. We should not be attached to something. So let's just throw some light on what actually attachment means. Attachment means our inability to say no, whatever the cost. That's probably just a very simplistic definition of attachment. Attachment means our inability to say no, whatever the cost. So for example, if we are attached to someone, we want them no matter what the cost. Our material intelligence will not be able to analyze whether wanting them is good or bad. But we just want them, we just want them. You know? We are very, very firm, firmly desiring for their association. You know, that's attachment. And the scriptures give us a classic example of Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra means what? No? That means very firm. And Rashtra means government. So Dhritarashtra was somebody who was very firmly attached to his government. So attached, that when he, that his son, Duryodhana, for that matter, the 99 others as well, you know, when they were causing havoc to the Pandavas, you know, Duryodhana was hell-bent on defrauding the Pandavas, you know, destroying the Pandavas. Notwithstanding all that, Dhritarashtra could not stop Duryodhana. Now this is a good example of an attachment. Attachment means an inability to say no, whatever the cost. Whatever the cost, if the Pandavas are alive or dead, whatever happens in Hastinapur, Dhritarashtra is not able to analyze. Why? Because of his attachment to his children. Whereas, and similarly, you know, in modern times, you know, when we get attached to someone, then we want it, no matter what the cost. And not only people, you know, our attachment can also be to objects. If we want something, when children want that Apple Watch, then they just want that Apple Watch. Now, Apple Watch is not going to tell you any time that is different from the normal watch. And neither is going to give us any Apple. But the kids get so glamored by this attraction that they just want it. That's called attachment. I want the iPad, so I want the iPad. Whether my eyes get destroyed, I don't care. That's attachment. Another example of attachment. And not only for children, for adults as well. When we want that car, then we want that car. You know, when we are more sober, then we will analyze. Okay, what is the cost? What is the value? You know, this is $30,000. Another one is $20,000, and that is $40,000. So we will do some rationalization, and you know, probably try to optimize, you know, the money that we have with the benefits that we will get. But if we get attracted to a car that is like, you know, whatever, then we'll buy it at whatever cost, even if it's like $60,000. So that's because we are buying on attachment rather than buying on rationalization. Attachment. So attachment to objects, attachment to the people we love, attachment to families, you know, binds us. We can get, I was thinking about this, you know, when the word attachment came, I was doing some research, not research, some reading on this, you know, and it is said that in the Vedic times, extended is the word, I think the extended families used to live together in one house. There would be grandparents, there would be parents, children, brothers, sisters, cousins, even uncles and aunties, you know. They would be all very, very closely knitted, most of the times in just one under the one roof. Everybody will be attached. The only thing that will be detached would be the toilets. The bathroom and the toilet should be away from the house, because that was the Vedic standard of being suci. The toilet and the bathroom will be detached. In modern times, the family is completely detached. The parents are in India. We are in Melbourne. Brother is in London. Sister is in New York. Cousins are in Singapore. The family is detached, but the toilet has to be attached. And not only attached, has to be at least two of them. This is a big problem for devotees who are living near the temple, and for those who aspire to come closer to the temple. Their biggest challenge is not the house price. Biggest challenge is whether we can get two bathrooms for them. with the husband and wife and one son and one daughter, maximum. Maximum I have seen in devotee congregation is a family of four, to date. No? But generally it's three or four. But still we want two bathrooms. Because for four of us, one bathroom is not sufficient in the morning. Whereas when it was a family of 12 and 15 under one roof, one bathroom which was detached was enough. Now with a family of three, one is not enough. And I tell you, after I was thinking, I was hearing this, I can tell you. Because I myself, you know, recently was looking for some properties near the temple. Sorry to digress a little bit. Yeah? For two bedroom and one bathroom, the price range in Albert Park, I'm not a real estate, but you know, just taking my observations. The price range for two bedroom and one bathroom, you can get it for 600,000. But the moment you get two bedroom with two bathroom, the price jumps by $200,000 or at least $100,000. So that becomes $700,000 to $750,000 for an apartment. Now, what does that tell us? If you're an accountant, you work it out. One bathroom costs $100,000. Why? Because we want it to be attached. Should be attached. That's the price. And that is without the water bill, by the way. Yeah. Just imagine the water bill when there are two bathrooms. So this is the price of being attached. And that is also just an apartment, not a house, but. And the word apartment itself is misleading. If you think of it, what does apart mean? Apart means not being together, correct? Now, apartments are something that are all together in one building. I mean, for God's sake, they should have been called compartments rather than apartments. Apartments means being apart. So this is Kali Yuga. Things are termed one thing and means another thing completely. Now, it's a delusion of saying, you know, we are all together in an apartment. Compartments, right? So that's the price of attachment. Also, back to what I was saying, from a philosophical point of view, attachment means the inability to say no, whatever the cost. We want it, so we want. We are attached to people, we are attached to things. But Bhagavad Gita tells us that everything that is valuable is not necessarily expensive. And everything that is expensive is not necessarily valuable. Everything that is expensive is not necessarily valuable. You know, the gadgets, they come with a newer and newer and newer version, they are not necessarily valuable. There's some utility in it for sure, but they're not necessarily, you know, that important for our survival. But they can be very expensive. But everything that is valuable is not necessarily expensive. No. You take the sunlight, for example, or the air that we breathe, there's no price to it, it's priceless. No. And these things are vital for our survival. Cannot survive without air and sunlight. But they are inexpensive, at least today. Tomorrow we might have to pay bills for even sunlight and air. At the rate, you know, the taxes are going up. Like it could be taxed, you know, for free air and free sunlight will be taxed a higher rate.
Guaranteed.
Because a lot of people are already carrying oxygen tanks. No? If you live in a city that is heavily polluted with the oxygen, with the air, then you need to carry an oxygen tank. So bills for air and water and sunlight is coming soon. And Srimad Bhagavatam predicts that. So, our attachment to people and to things, again, are because of our impure mind. Our mind is not able to rationalize, our intelligence is not able to analyze what is good and what is bad. What is good for Krishna consciousness and what is not good for Krishna consciousness. Because a lot of time, our mind tends to do what we don't intend to do. It just tends to do what we don't intend to do. It just wants to do things that we don't want to do. You know, and New Year is coming, and this is a big thing in the office at the moment. You know, it goes on every year. People make New Year's resolution like anything. Devotees also do it. You know? From New Year, from fiscal January 2020, I will not eat the pakora at all. I will not take halwa, pakora and puri at the temple no matter what. No. Resolution. No. Pakka. No. Dritta. No. Firm resolution. 1st of January, there's a New Year's feast, we survive somehow or the other. 2nd of January, we survive somehow or the other. 3rd of January, mind says, yeah, one puri has never killed anybody, so he will also not die. Take, somehow or the other, we resist. But by 5th or 6th, you know, most of us are gone, including myself. Let's go. So what is New Year resolution actually becomes New Year resolution. It's completely dissolved all our firm belief of being pakka, solid. So mind is very tricky. Mind can take us from one place to the other. So, why is a purified mind intelligent? Why is a purified mind important? Because everything that we offer to Krishna has to be suci, has to be pure. Krishna accepts us only when we are pure. So that includes not only our external hygiene, but also our internal hygiene. That includes the mind intelligence and the false ego that has to be purified. And Bhishma Pitama in Canto 1, when he offers his Bhishma Stuti prayers to Lord Krishna, he tells us why Krishna should accept Bhishma Pitama. So his Bhishma Stuti starts with this point about why Lord Krishna should accept Bhishma Pitama. And recently, excuse me, His Grace Ananda Prabhu was here, so he was teaching us about Bhishma Stuti, and I got tremendously inspired with the tune that he was singing itself. What we speak about the impact of the Sanskrit meaning, underpinning that verse. So the first verse starts with, and this is, you catch the word Matir, because Bhishma Pitama is talking about his mind and his intelligence, which is the Buddhi Yogam I was talking about. No? Iti mati rupakal pita vitreshna bhagavati sattvata pungave vibhuni. So iti mati rupakal, mati is the mind and the intelligence. So Bhishma Devi is saying to Lord Krishna that iti mati, my mind, iti mati rupakal, my mind and intelligence at the moment is iti mati rupakal pita vitreshna. At the moment it has got no other desires. It does not have any sense gratification desires at the moment. It's purified. So the process of Krishna consciousness, I have purified my mind and intelligence, and therefore let my thinking, feeling and willing be directed towards your lotus feet. And because Krishna, my mind has been intelligent, my mind and intelligence has been fully purified, you please accept me. And then he continues. So purifying our mind becomes very important for Krishna to accept us. Now, having said that, of course, most of you are already asking this question. But then, it is only through Krishna's mercy that we can purify our mind and intelligence. If Krishna has got this high standard of, you clean yourself and then I'll come to you. But then how do we clean? Where do we go to clean ourselves? We only have to come to Krishna to clean ourselves. Otherwise, nothing else works. Apart from the Maha Mantra, nothing else seems to be working. That is also true. So Krishna sets a higher standard of you purify and then come to me. But equally, elsewhere, especially Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, at whatever level you are, just come to me. Don't worry, I will purify you. And our acharyas give the example of, when the mother tells, the child, who has just come out from playing in the mud and whatever, in the water, and he looks very dirty. The mother says, you go and clean yourself and then come to me. Because you are looking so horrible at the moment. It's just, the clothes are so dirty. You go and clean yourself and come to me. But the child who has been playing football all day, and he's so tired, it's like, oh, mommy, but I can't, I don't have the energy. No. You go and clean yourself and then come to me. Otherwise, I don't want you. You're stinking at the moment. But mother, I'm so tired. And the child is begging and begging and begging that I can't because I'm so tired. I don't have the energy to clean myself. And a loving mother will say, what? Come, I'll clean you. Come, get step into the bathroom and clean you up. So that's because there is love. When there is begging from the child and the mother is loving, all that the requirement is you clean yourself and then come to me, the mother will change that to say, okay, you come, I'll clean you up now because you are my child. So Krishna is like that. You clean, you purify your mind and intelligence and then come to me, Krishna is saying. But when we are begging Krishna to say our mind is not purified, our intelligence is not purified, time and again I fall down into the pool of material existence and suffer. Oh Krishna, please beg, I'm begging you to help me. Krishna says, okay, now I can recognize you are sincere, come, I'll clean you up. Come in my force now. So like that. So the important thing for us here is to beg Krishna to clean us up, because we are so entangled with all the anarthas that we carry, the defects in our heart. So, I'll make the last point, and then I'll stop for some questions and comments. Because it's an allegory at the moment, Narad Muni is preaching to Prachin Bhari for his benefit of Krishna consciousness through an allegory, using another example. When we are preached to our saint before as well, and when we are preaching to somebody, it is very, very important, to not at a new level, not at a new level, when people are quite new, not to throw so much of, because in here the Puranjani is saying that Puranjani was saving him through Deepyanti Pade Pade. That was the last time. And I ask you to remember this word Deepyanti. Because Puranjani is saying that Puranjani used to save me through light, through enlightenment. You know, at every step when there was danger, she was throwing me light, she was enlightening me. But in Krishna consciousness, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam we find, and especially when you look at Krishna's interaction with Arjuna, when Arjuna is suffering, so-called suffering, you know, under Yoga Maya, Krishna is not only throwing light to Arjuna, Krishna is also showering warmth to Krishna is also showering warmth to Arjuna. And there's a difference between light and warmth, although the source is the same. With preaching we can throw warmth on somebody and we can also throw light on somebody. And what's the difference? The difficulty is, you know, in our neophyte stages of preaching as well, you know, when we are not experienced with, you know, so much of the intricacies of how to deal with the new people, if we end up throwing too much of light, it can be blinding. Too much of light can be blinding. If we just show, you know, that this is the lofty requirements of Krishna consciousness, or this is what Krishna consciousness is, just all philosophy, people might think that this is far too up. This is too lofty. I can never get there. And therefore, I will not even endeavor. So too much light at once can also push people away from Krishna consciousness. And if you only throw too much of warmth, you know, to say, no, we are all good friends and I'm there to help you, you know, oh, you are suffering, you know, oh, what can I do for you? Just warmth. Then after, when somebody throws warmth to us, it feels good. Correct? Especially when somebody comes and consoles us, it feels good. But because it is superficial, it's not on the platform of Krishna consciousness, the feel good also dies out after some time. What used to feel good does not feel good anymore. What used to feel very good at one time does not feel good anymore. Why? Because it's superficial. It's on a bodily platform. It's not on the platform of the jiva. So it is very important when somebody is guiding us and when we are guiding somebody, it has to be a good balance of light and warmth. You throw light about, you know, that Krishna consciousness is this and this is what our philosophy is saying, enlighten them. But also give them warmth, you know, give them that love and care. And in my, you know, little experience of Bhakti Bhiksha preaching, I have seen that it is more the warmth that makes people devotees rather than the light. The light makes them devotee at the later stages, but the attraction generally is the warmth. When you just talk to them, you understand them, you hear them, you know, you have prasadam with them, you know, you play something with them, you visit their houses. These things attract them. Because people are not there to see what we believe in. People are there to watch how we behave. Srila Prabhupada, you know, when in his early days when he was staying in America, then there was one in the apartment that he was staying in with his new devotees that time. There was then in the adjoining apartment there was an old lady, and she was a little grumpy, and she would complain a lot about, you know, Prabhupada and his, more about the disciples, you know, that they would wake up in the morning, they would be making too much noise, you know, oh my God, what is happening, you know, she was very, very getting inimical towards the devotees. And the devotees tried to console her, you know, to say, oh, we are doing something spiritual, etc. But she was not budging, so she was like that. So, devotees told this to Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada, one day when he was just walking past, and he saw the old lady in the balcony, and Prabhupada walked up to her. And he started talking with this old lady for good 20-30 minutes. And devotees were surrounding. And he kept talking. So after that, he went 30 minutes, Srila Prabhupada left. So when Prabhupada left, you know, the devotees, the disciples were amazed. Because in that whole 30 minutes, Srila Prabhupada never ever spoke anything about Krishna consciousness. Nothing about Krishna consciousness to that old lady at all. So then the disciples asked Srila Prabhupada that, you know, you didn't preach to her at all, you know, and it's almost like you wasted your 30 minutes. Srila Prabhupada said, no, no, it's okay. So the next day, the old lady comes to the temple and then tells the disciples that, actually, your Swami is a very nice person. I had another image of him, but he's actually a very nice person. It was such a warmth to talk to him. So see what's happening. Now, Prabhupada is such an expert preacher. You don't throw light where you're not required to throw light. All he gave to the old lady, and Prabhupada told his disciples that old people generally, when they are alone, they feel very lonely. So all they are looking for is some love and care. So if you give them love and care, they'll become Krishna conscious. So don't preach where we don't have to open our mouth. So sometimes our behavior. Another time, one of the reporters asks Prabhupada, now how do we identify your disciples? How do we identify their, ISKCON devotees? What did Prabhupada say? He said that ISKCON devotees, they are very gentlemen and gentle lady. So Prabhupada didn't say, that my disciples wake up at 4 a.m. in the morning, and then they go to Mangalarti and then read Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, chant. Nothing about that. They are very gentlemen. What does that mean? That, people are more attracted to our behavior than our words. So if you behave well to them, they get attracted to Krishna consciousness. So we want that, correct? When we are advancing in our Krishna consciousness, we are looking for some warmth. We are looking for some love and care. But the philosophy also enriches us. So it goes hand in hand. So Narad Muni, if you see here, very tactfully, gives the allegory to connect to Prachin Bhari at a human platform, to touch his heart. And then, when the chapter ends and the new chapter starts, after Vaidarbhi's life, and then actually after that, the third one, then Narad Muni just goes full throttle to say, Prachin Bhari, you are wasting your life. That Puranjan is none but you. You are killing these animals, and they are suffering. Next lifetime, you will be PSD by the karmic reactions you are going through. Why don't you get out of this? Do something more useful. So more direct preaching. But that's after establishing some connection with Prachin Bhari. So very, very important for us to preach according to time, place, and circumstance. Because Krishna consciousness, and I'll sum up here, Krishna consciousness, is not only about bringing humanity to Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is not only about bringing humanity to Krishna, but it is also about bringing humanity together. And that's why we see that in devotee association we relish. We are just so joyful in devotee association. Because Krishna consciousness brings us together, and then together we advance to Krishna consciousness, to Krishna. Yeah, so it's important. So the warmth brings devotees together, and the light brings all the devotees closer to Krishna. I will stop here, it's 9 o'clock. If you have any questions or comments, I will take it.
So you said that you should be thinking, really, about your testimony. So why is it so important to think of Krishna?
Why is it so important to think of Krishna's lotus feet? So Mahatma Prabhu has asked, that I had said that in my lecture that it is important to have the thinking, feeling and willing towards the Lord's lotus feet. So why the lotus feet is so important? Many reasons. Maybe two or three that immediately comes to my mind. When we say that Krishna's feet is a lotus feet, what does it actually mean? There are two meanings there, first of all. There is a symbolic meaning as well as a literal meaning. Symbolic meaning because lotus flower is very beautiful. Yeah. So Krishna's feet is also very beautiful. So that's a symbolic connection. Yeah. Literal meaning is that Krishna's feet, under his feet, they have certain symbols, under the feet of Lord Vishnu, such as Sang, Chakra, Gada, etc. So one of them is lotus. So because one of the features is lotus, Krishna's it's called a lotus feet, because there's a lotus literally underneath Krishna's feet. Yeah, or not under Krishna's feet, but at the bottom of Krishna's feet. Yeah? And symbolic meaning is that because the lotus flower is beautiful, so Krishna's feet is also very beautiful, so it's lotus feet. The third reason is, again, a symbolic reason. The lotus flower is not only beautiful, but also very smooth. Yeah? So Krishna's lotus feet is also very smooth. No? We get cactus. Sometimes, we get those things at the bottom of the hill that, we have to scrape off after some time. It just gets very, what is it called? The word. Well, cracks, but there's another word. Callous. We get callous at the hill, so you need to have the callous scraper. But Krishna's lotus feet is very smooth like lotus. So you need to know third reason why it's called lotus feet. Why then? So that's why we call it the lotus. Why do we call Krishna's feet as the lotus feet? But why the emphasis on lotus feet and not the other part of the body? The answer to that is the other part of the body is also equally worshipable. But when we identify ourselves with the feet of somebody, it is a sign of respect. Because respect comes, you know, when we are humble. You know? Humility means bowing down. In love, we fall. You know? So when we love Krishna, we fall to his lotus feet. So we start from his, Prabhupada teaches us, you know, in the Bhagavatam Gita, the proper way of looking at somebody is starting with the lotus feet. No? A proper way of looking at a higher personality is to start with the lotus feet. So when we come and take darshan of the Lord Chief on the altar, our vision should start with their lotus feet and then gradually rise, you know, to their knees, to their belly, to their chest and to their face. So that's a respectful way of taking darshan. We do not immediately jump to their face and then go down to the feet. Because that will then kind of indicate that now we are kind of at an equal level now, eye to eye. Yeah. But devotees start with the lotus feet and then gradually climb the darshan up to the face. And Kunti Maharani teaches us the same thing in Canto 1 of the Srimad Bhagavatam. I mean, when she talks about, you know, that let these calamities come again and again. In that particular section, now what is, there is a particular mantra, a particular verse about Krishna's lotus feet, about Krishna's feet being like lotus, his garments like lotus. Does anybody know that verse?
Yeah,
Namo Pankaja Nabhaya. Namo Pankaja Nabhaya. So Nabhi is the belly. So there's a technical difference here. Because Kunti Maharani is starting with the belly. Namo Pankaja means lotus, as you know. Namo Pankaja Nabhaya. So your belly is like lotus. Namo Pankaja Mahine. Your garments are like lotus. Then,
Namo Pankaja Netraya.
Your eyes are like lotus. And then? Namo
Pankaja
Namaste. Namo? Namaste. So you are so lotus. So why does, there's a technical difference here. Why does Kunti Maharani starting with the belly? Prabhupada explains that Kunti Maharani is also not only just Krishna's devotee and disciple, but she's also Krishna's aunt as well. You know? So there's that relationship of being an aunt as well. So she starts with here. But for us, we start with Krishna's lotus feet. Yeah, is that sufficient? Yes.
With your analysis, how did we go from attached family to attached bathroom?
So the question is, you know, how do we go from the attached family to attached something else? The answer is that. At the end of the day, as I was saying, we have to offer our purified mind and intelligence to Krishna. We have to offer our heart to Krishna. That is a pure devotee. In the meantime, when we are not able to offer our heart to Krishna, what we can do at least is offer what is in our heart to Krishna. There is a difference between offering our heart to Krishna and offering what is in our heart to Krishna. We are not able to offer our heart to Krishna because our heart is filled with things that we are also attached to. And generally speaking, people are attached either to the people they love and the possessions they own. Generally speaking, people we love and the possessions we and the objects that we possess is where our attachment is. So because, and the subtle things as well, like, you know, pride and ego and all those are all the things that we have accumulated in our heart. So because this heart is not pure and we are not able to offer this to Krishna at the moment, at least what we can do is take out things little by little, those things that we are attached to, which can either be the people we love or the things that we are attached to, including the apartment, and offer it to Krishna gradually and gradually. And rest assured, Prabhupada tells us and guarantees us, as Krishna gets a foothold in our heart, as Krishna gets a foothold in our heart, if you give him little space, as he gets a little foothold in our heart, the Dhammi Buddhi Yogam Tam. He will give us the intelligence of how to detach from the rest of the things that we are attached to. And one day it will become completely iti mati rupa upakarma. It will become pure, completely purified. So that, you know, the heart is soft like a butter and Krishna will come and steal it. That's why it's makanjo. So it has to be soft like butter. So we start offering things that we are attached to as an offering to Krishna. Gradually we start offering things. So if you are attached to the apartment, because that, or to the house, you know, which has got 5 bedrooms, flashy, you know, living areas and all that, what we can do is at least offer that to Krishna, you know. Use it as a facility to increase Krishna consciousness. Start a bhakti riksha. And that house that we are attached to is now becoming a temple of the Lord. Gradually, you know, our vision, our intelligence will get strengthened and sharpened, and we start seeing them as an object that can be offered to Krishna. If you are attached to the car, offering to Krishna, driving to the temple. So the way to get detached from the attachment is through offering it to the Krishna. That's the easiest way. Anything else? That's my first. I'll probably take last question if there is any other reason. Yes, sir.
What is the difference between material intelligence and spiritual intelligence? Wow. We are living in the material world. We still need a little bit of material intelligence, but then how will spiritual intelligence help us with the material intelligence?
Yeah, nice question. So what is the difference between the material intelligence and a spiritual intelligence? And because we are in a material world, we need some material intelligence. So if we have only spiritual intelligence, then how will our material life function? That's a question. Yeah. So the answer to that is, material intelligence, as I was explaining before, you know, at the moment, the focus is on material things only. That's why it's called material intelligence. And material intelligence are generally focused on ahar, nidra, vayam, vichara, eating, sleeping, waiting and defending. There is nothing more than that they can think of. Unanswered question is, where is the source of consciousness? So with material things, they are grappling with the material disasters. And the output of that is, there is only more and more and more suffering. Material solutions to material things are nothing but like a band-aid solution, Prabhupada tells us. Why? Because you solve one, the other one will pop up. It's like, you know, you lay a carpet, Prabhupada says, if you press one problem, the carpet will pop up somewhere else because the air is still there. So it will keep popping. You cannot get rid of it. Yeah. So material intelligence is like that. No? In the Ramayana, the material intelligence is compared to Ravana. Ravana had 10 heads. No? After getting rid of all the armies and all the soldiers of Lanka, when Lord Ram finally had to deal with Ravana, and he was trying to kill Ravana, he used to just chop off his head. One head chopped off, 10 chopped off, Ravana would get the 10 heads there. Now, so this is another symbolic pastime, yeah? What does the heads represent? The heads represent the material desires, the material intelligence. You cut one, another one will pop up. You cut one, another one will pop up. So then, Vibhishan tells Lord Ram, that the way to get rid of the Ravana that's in our heart, because Ravana is one Ravana, but we are probably also little Ravana sometimes. The way to cut off material intelligence from our heart, is not to chop off the head, but to chop off the material intelligence where it is residing. And that the residence of the material intelligence is in the heart. So at that point in time, Ram shoots the arrow at Ravana's heart, which we all know that to say the past time. Yeah? So when Lord Ram shoots the arrow at Ravana's heart, then Ravana is gone completely. So our material intelligence is also in our material heart. So the way to get rid of it is to shoot a spiritual arrow to the material intelligence and eradicate it forever. And we know Prabhupada has given us the Mahamantra to deal with any material problems. Yeah? So then we get the Dami Buddhi Yogamitam. Then we get that spiritual intelligence through which we can solve not only our spiritual problems, because there are no spiritual problems. Through the spiritual intelligence, we will not only advance in Krishna consciousness, but we will also be able to function appropriately with our material problems. Because material things are nothing but a subset of the spirituality. It's just a little manifestation of the bigger, gigantic spiritual manifestation. So once we situate ourselves on a spiritual platform, then the material things will not even touch us, and they will not even be a problem to us, in a longer time. Again, the flower, the energy of the lotus flower. The lotus flower is living in the most filthiest of places, but it is untouched. Because it is lotus. In this case, it is the spiritual intelligence. Even though it is residing in the filthy water, it will not be untouched. It will be untouched. It will still smell and look as beautiful as it would otherwise be. Yeah? So if we can situate ourselves in Krishna consciousness, then material things will not bother us. It will gradually diminish. But that requires sincerity. So what is the difference? Material intelligence is to deal only with material things. Spiritual intelligence is to deal with spirituality as well with material things. Trust me, those who are on a spiritual platform, fewer devotees, for example, Srila Prabhupada taught us not only how to chant properly, how to read properly Bhagavad Gita, how to read preach. He not only taught us that, but he was one of the most astute businessmen ever, if you think of it. Somebody, give one example of a businessman who started from scratch, from $2 and build millions of dollars of temples all over the world. Not possible. So he was astute in everything. He was a brilliant teacher, an expert coordinator, expert organizer of projects and all that. So when we are on a spiritual platform, material things automatically becomes easy for a devotee. All the qualities of the demigods are endowed on a devotee when he takes up Krishna consciousness. So one of the devotees is who? Let's say, devotee is in charge of creation. Those qualities are already in a devotee. It will come. So you can deal with material and spiritual things together. Amit, you stop here. Thank you so much for being so participative in your indigenous. You stop here. Prabhu Bharti.
Jai.
Bhagavatam.
Jai.